Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lincoln on Lending, David Lincoln.
Good to have you with us, everybody. It's Monday, May 19th, and we're broadcasting live from the National Secondary Marketing Conference in Times Square, New York City. It is a well-attended conference and a lot to talk about already. There's been a lot talking, and the conferences have got some interesting information, and so we're looking forward to talking about that. I have a special guest with us today, Lester Dominick, who is the president and founder of Mortgage Flex. We're going to be talking a bit about technology, but also getting his perspective on the secondary markets and get his commentary about the what he's hearing here at the conference. So a man on the street as well as other things. Good to have you with us, everybody. We want to say a special thank you to our sponsors, QM Compliant Options, that with benefits for borrowers and lenders, with is provided by United Guaranty. In addition to a wide range of borrower paid MI options, United Guaranty's qualified mortgage insurance QMI suite includes lender paid MI as well, which is LPMI, as if we need some more initials in our industry, that benefits for many borrowers and lenders. Because of the premium for the lender paid mortgage insurance, LPMI, is paid by the lender, no MI cost is included on the QM 3% cap, so on the point. So that's a real advantage. So you need to become familiar with this. You can go check it out. Oftentimes, it can result in lower monthly payments, so which just helps people get qualified. There's no MI closing costs in this. A lot of features. Head on over to their website, www.ugcorp.com, and learn more about it. We want to say a special thank you to our friends at United Guaranty. I haven't seen them here at the conference yet. I'm hoping to run up to them. All their competitors are running up to me and talking to me. And so it's good to be here. Also, many of you get a notification about this broadcast from our friends at Velma. Velma stands for Virtual Electronic Marketing Assistant, and we really appreciate Brent Emler and the team there at Velma for getting the word out about the broadcast. We great marketing solution. If you are looking for an electronic marketing solution, get a hold of the folks at Velma at Velma.com. Great partnership, and they do a great job. There's others out there in the space, but I tell you, I can personally attest to the fact of what they do. So let's get into it. Joe Farr, good to have you on the broadcast here today.
Good morning,
Dave. Give us an update on the market. I'm dialed in looking at MBS Quoteline right now, and it looks like we've got some volatility going on.
Well, we have a bit. We're right now, we're just about where we ended the day Friday, just up a 32nd. But starting about 10:45, we had a nice little spike higher, but it only lasted about 45 minutes. So we're currently, like I said, up just a little bit, but we've been as much as 7/30 seconds higher than where we are right now. And so, you know, the volatility's there. Don't know quite what to attribute that rise in rates to, and the fall right after it, other than maybe it's just the start of a holiday week of trading. Maybe volatile all week.
Yeah, maybe just one of those. Yeah, it's a surprise because there is no economic data until the FOMC minutes. And, of course, if anyone was on your website, they'd be able to see that right now. FOMC minutes, 2 p.m. on Wednesday, nothing be leading up to it. So does that mean it's going to be a quiet week?
Well, other than it being a holiday shortened week, we close early on Friday, going to be closed on Monday, and those kind of weeks generally lead to volatile weeks rather than quiet weeks.
Well, let's talk about last week because it was there was a lot. There was some improvement in the MBS prices. So
yeah, we had a nice improvement.
Rundown.
We were up a half a point in price last week. In fact, since the 1st of April, we're up over 2 points in price, so much so that we have switched our focus from the 4% security to the 3.5%. And we're at some of the best pricing levels that we've seen going back a long ways. A little bit in November we got to these levels, but not by much. And then prior to that, it was just after the Fed announcement of the beginning of the taper that we had better prices. So it's really been a nice little run.
It has been, and I look at some of what we can anticipate. One of the things we're hearing from the floor here is several of the commentary was it's a bit of a puzzlement to why bonds are falling, and you're listening to both, I was listening to Fox Business, which I was scheduled to be on today, but the merger exam, the merger talk with AT&T bumped me until tomorrow, it looks like. But it's really interesting to see the surprise in the Fed. They had Mark Zandi on CNBC earlier this morning, and it was really interesting to see what was going on with that. So anyway, I'll let you continue on here, Joe.
Yeah. Well, you know, part of the reason we're low is because there's not a lot of faith that the economy's any stronger than we thought it was going into the year. I mean, and I say that because in the March data came out really pretty strong, and people got excited about potentially it being the start of an improving, a more rapidly growing economy, but the April data is kind of saying otherwise. The April data has been mixed, but when you look at some of the bigger items like retail sales that came out last Monday, they were a big miss to the downside.
Big miss.
Grew just 0.1%. And you know, that's a big part of the economy. And when that came in as low as it did, it kind of foreshadowed, an improvement in the economy that's maybe just on the 2-2.5% GDP kind of growth. And so, MBS prices rose nicely on that news. We'd kind of like to see a stronger economy, but it's good for mortgage rates.
Yeah.
And then prices continued to improve on Wednesday after PPI came out and industrial production came out. PPI rose surprisingly high, but
mm-hmm.
you know, there's been some changes in how they measure PPI to where they're now adding in services. It used to just be the cost
I
of
noticed
goods,
that.
And now they're adding in the cost of services. And so it's made it a more volatile measure and one that people aren't quite used to, and so it's not being focused on as much as CPI is, which came out the day after that. But also on Wednesday, the day the PPI came out, industrial production came out, and it too was a bit weak. And so those two items really indicated, there's some concern about the pace of economic activity. Now, on Thursday, CPI came out. It was pretty much as expected. It's showing 1.8% annual increase in costs, and that was as expected, and still below the 2% benchmark point for the Fed. Industrial production dropped 0.6% when 0.1% was expected, a positive 0.1%, and it was really kind of the thing that showed the weather related benefit of March data, and then the bounce back effect in April of the big rise following the weather issues creates a big drop following the big rise. So that came out Thursday. We saw a very good jobless claims number. I don't know if you noticed
that.
It was close to 300,000. That's the lowest reading since May of 2007. So, that was a very good start. And this Thursday's jobless claims number, I think, it will be interesting to see if it carries on what happened last week. Housing starts came out Friday, and that was a surprise to the upside, but most of that was in multifamily, which doesn't benefit. You know, it benefits the economy, but it doesn't benefit our market all that much.
Right. Especially when you compare that to the home buy builders confidence that was announced week before. Yeah, and that was not
the day.
Disappointing.
Yeah, it was disappointing. It brings in this week. We have some housing data coming out this week, and we'll just see. I mean, with the disappointed builders index, that followed the biggest the week before was the housing starts. You might be thinking about it. It rose to above a million on an annualized basis, and a big surprise to the upside there. We have existing home sales this week as well as new home sales. Existing home sales comes out on Thursday, and the consensus is for about a 1.3% increase. New home sales on Friday, they're expected to increase by a much larger margin. but I think that's sort of that weather-related bounce potential. The FOMC minutes.
What do you anticipate here? Any insights?
Well, I keep saying the minutes shouldn't be that big an influence on the market. Everything that's in there has been talked about in the statement. It's been talked about by the Fed speakers, but each of the last two times it's caused a significant reaction. The last time it was favorable, and the time before that it was unfavorable. So certainly it's worth paying attention to and listening in and maybe watching the market as the minutes are read on Wednesday at 2 o'clock Eastern time. Then the other day that comes out this week, your leading indicators comes out on Friday, and that's about it. It's really a pretty quiet week other than the new and existing home sales in the minutes.
It is a quiet week, but you know what? Any time the Feds are talking, especially when we have Janet Yellen, fairly new, and she's not new at the Feds, but new in the making the commentary, you know, she's still learning the talking points. She got into created a little bit of anxiety out there when a couple of things she was saying in one of those. So we'll have to see. That was her first one. I think she's a veteran. Well, she's calmed down now. I think we expect it to be pretty much as anticipated, but you got to stay tuned, folks. If you don't have this service, MBS Quote Line, it's almost impossible to stay in touch with it. It is a fast-moving, dynamic market, especially, I mean, I've got it up here, my iPad, I carry it, my iPhone, I've got it everywhere. It's always before my eyes. Great service, Joe, and I appreciate so much the manner in which you do it and the concise. So very good. Appreciate your commentary today. You're going to be around, and then stay on because I want to have you jump in. I mean, again, Lester Dominick's a CPA. As you know, as we were talking before the broadcast, you and Andy, I'm the odd man out here. I'm the only one that doesn't have those letters behind there. So we got to, I can't wait to dive in and ask all the questions and have you join in on that later on. So I appreciate you being here with us. We're going to be right back after this break with Paul Mollo. He's on the line. Can't wait to get his commentary. So we'll be right back after this brief break.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS Quoteline delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur. Get MBS prices as trades happen. Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect and know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS Quoteline, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS Quoteline today at MBSQuoteLine.com. MBSQuoteLine.com. 646-716-4972. The Lickin on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
Good to have you with us. Again, we're broadcasting live from the National Mortgage Banking Conference, the National Secondary Conference, and big thank yous and kudos out to the MBA folks for setting up really a really great technology setup. We've tried this before, and it hasn't always worked, but something that always does work is Paul Mollo. He's always bringing us the latest great stuff. We got him on the line. Paul Mollo, how are you doing? I'm clicking over to your website right now, IMF News, www.imfnews.com. So it's good to have you with us.
Thanks, Jeff.
What do you got for
us?
Are you
at the National Drum Association Conference?
Because
I heard a lot of banging when Joe was on the line.
Well, I'm trying to, you know, we're always trying. You never know how it's going to come off of the audio when you're doing these from one of these conferences. So, but anyway, yeah, it's not the drumming conference. It may be me just tapping away here on the mic. Anyway, let's get into what's on. What's FHFA ready to take the industry input on mortgage guarantee fees? Now, that Bancroft's running around here. Can't wait to talk to him while I'm here. But run through the news that you have up here today. And, again, folks, you need to check this out, www.imfnews.com. So what do you got, Paul?
Well, John is at the conference, and he was there last night when apparently Bob Ryan spoke. And I guess the bottom, you know, we all know they're working on doing something with G fees and LLPAs. And apparently Ryan spoke last night and said, you know, we're ready to start taking comments. So this is a huge deal for the industry. No one wants higher G fees, but, you know, LLPAs have, you know, hurt the market. There's a lot of borrowers who, you know, can't afford the extra charges for, you know, lower FICOs and things along those lines. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. You know, we've been hearing that maybe they'll keep G fees where they are at 50 bips and get rid of some of these LLPAs, and you know, the other thing we're hearing is that there could be one price, shall we say, fee structure for all borrowers, regardless of FICO scores.
Yes.
And you know, we'll see what happens. It's, you know, we're hearing a lot of different things. The industry obviously could use the volume. They feel that, you know, they have such good underwriting and LOS systems and underwriting systems that, you know, the industry can afford to take on more risk. And delinquencies, as we all know, over the last 3 years have been next to nothing. So this
right.
is could be a pretty big development for the industry. Everyone was glomming on to Watt's comments last week, a lot of the changes coming to buybacks and reps and warrants. So the industry is hoping that they're going to catch a break here, and it's going to help big time with volume. Of course, rates are down, as Joe talked about. You know, who knows? There's a lot of talk that rates are not going up the rest of the year. There's a lot of fear about where stocks are going, that maybe the economy isn't going to really take off a whole lot. I mean, there's all sorts of viewpoints. You guys have talked about that. So
right.
that's going to be a major thing to watch. Another story we have from Brandon Ivey today, CFPB ready to crack down on lenders facilitating occupancy fraud. Apparently, we wrote something about 3 weeks ago about some lenders that are putting down mortgages as non-owner occupied to get out from under the QM, and then the buyer doesn't rent the thing out but occupies the unit himself. That's
right.
an interesting development. CFPB is looking at stuff like that. I don't know a lot more detail. The story's on the website. The reader should take a look at that. The big story that broke over the weekend, apparently San Antonio Mayor Julian Castro is going to get the HUD job. Sean Donovan's going to move over to OMB.
Yeah, I read that.
An official announcement is supposedly going to come later in the week. That someone pointed out to us here, it might have been Mary Mullane of our marketing staff, that wasn't Henry Cisneros, the former San Antonio mayor, HUD secretary, came through San Antonio. So what is it with the city of San Antonio?
Well, there's a few Hispanics down in that market, so maybe that is interesting.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It's an interesting development. We were hearing a year ago that Dunham was looking to move on. No one was sure where he was going to go. There wasn't much speculation that he was going to go into the industry, so people assumed it was going to be another job in the administration, and it turns out that's true. So, you know, a lot of people still complaining about higher MIPS with FHA, and that's going to be no one expects that's going to change overnight, so we'll see about that. Phoenix Capital's out there with another big servicing portfolio. It's almost $2 billion in Ginnies. There's a flow component. Late last week, we started to hear about Select Portfolio Services. They might be owned by one of the street firms. I think they're working on a big legacy deal. I don't have any details, but I came from a pretty good source last week. We also heard there were some big jumbo portfolios being offered in the market last week as well. And, you know, there's talk that maybe we're going to see more jumbos changing hands as the second quarter begins to wind down. Maybe we'll see some more jumbo securitizations. That market could be opening up. Stevens was there. We have a story about his speech this morning.
Yeah.
No major bombshells from Dave, really, but, you know, he was going on.
I was there.
And lamenting a bit about what's going on with the housing reform. And, he sort of hit it on the head in a way, saying it's really fear of change. And it's not just fear of change.
Right.
I mean, I've been talking to people about this for months on end. You know, there's a real feeling that no matter what you do, it is so complicated that it's almost impossible to do. And then you mix in with the GSEs and the lawsuits owned by being filed against the government for the takings and the preferred stock agreements and the hedge funds buying up that stock and trying to get a big payoff. And, you know, how do you create a new Fannie and Freddie? Should you create a new Fannie and Freddie? Do we need the implicit guarantee, the explicit guarantee, no guarantee? It is just so complicated. People are afraid that if they get it wrong, the housing market's going to crash. And we can talk about
that. Well, when they represent 97% of liquidity, there's reason for the fear. I like what you put up here. Nothing to fear but GSE fear itself.
Yeah.
I thought that was a great, great little soundbite.
I hope the family Franklin Delano Roosevelt doesn't sue me for that one.
Yeah, I know, but I thought that was good, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, we mentioned that FHA delinquency report falling, that the MBA delinquency report came out late last week. So that's, you know, that's all the good stuff. One last note on Inside Mortgage Finance's website, www.imfnews.com. We have a poll, and we recently asked everyone what's the biggest impediment to mortgage volumes taking off this spring. And by a pretty decent majority, the largest percentage said it had nothing to do with rates per se, but it has to do with a lack of housing inventory. Everyone's banking on purchases, but there's a real fear, and I've talked to realtors about this in the D.C. area, there's a real fear that there's just not enough homes to buy. And now rates are falling, but, you know, not enough homes.
That's true in certain markets, not all markets, but the hot markets, inventory is a real issue. So lots
of
interesting
data. You're down Texas way, and I heard Houston.
Yeah, down in Austin. It's hotter than heck down there.
Yeah. Something's up.
Without question.
Better. I don't have any letters after my name either, just so you know.
You heard that. I'm surrounded by CPAs. That's good, you know. But it's always great. They're surrounded by someone who's got their finger and pulse on the market, and you do. Thank you so much for dialing in, Paul, and giving us an update. Can't wait to meet John, see him here. And, again, the comment, we're live, as you can hear from the background noise here, folks. But it's great to be with you. Appreciate you dialing in, and we'll be right back again with some commentary with you next week, hopefully, and then check it out, www.imfnews.com. Sorry, folks, got a little distracted with a lot of activity around here. Let's get in, and Alice Alvey cannot make it to the broadcast. She is on vacation, taking a day off, and so we're going to get a couple. She was kind enough to send in her comments, though, because she said there's some things that you need to be aware of. So here's Alice Alvey's commentary for today.
Hello, everyone. This is Alice Alvey here today by recording. I wish I could be there live, but I'm lucky to be out on vacation with my husband of 36 years, and we're out having a great time. So I have recorded this in advance on Friday. Not sure if there's going to be any hot news that comes up by the time you hear this on Monday. So, Dave, thanks for letting me record this. First up is the fact that we have a proposed rule where we only have a short window remaining for all of you to get in and file your comments. I've talked about for the last couple of weeks that the CFPB has put out proposed amendments to Regulation Z, and this is going to be, the CFPB is looking for feedback from us about a cure provision within the QM points and fees test. So be very careful. When you go to the CFPB website, you could be fooled that you have until July 7th to file your comments. But other portions of this proposal have until July 7th, and those are the sections that really apply to the nonprofits and the small creditors. The main piece about trying to give us some point of cure, where if we, on one loan, for example, we made a mistake and we are off by just a few hundred dollars for the three-point test, can we have any kind of a cure where we refund the money to the borrower, we've caught it right after closing, give the borrower their money back, and still be able to classify this as a QM loan? That's basically what this provision is trying to give us a framework to be able to have a little movement within the law. Certainly, it's not something you can use regularly, that you can have constant mistakes. The law is very goes on with detail about that. But the main point of being able to potentially refund a borrower, if, as long as we catch the mistake within 120 days of closing, I think is a big relief to still be able to call something a QM loan. Read the verbiage carefully. Think through scenarios that you have where you may have caught a mistake. Is 120 days enough time? Should we really be asking for 180 days to maybe pull in a little bit more time for post-closing QC? I think in theory, if you think about when this is a problem, it's something went wrong even in the closing review of the HUD 1, and, or you have a different interpretation in points and fees in a post-closing world, or someone just made an honest mistake. And so there doesn't appear to be any dollar limitation on the fee. It is just simply about that it's not a pattern or practice. So make sure you get your comments in by June 5th. For the cost to cure QM provision that's now posted on the CFPB website. The other important thing I want to make sure you're all aware of is that House Bill 3211 has made it out of committee. This is a bill that has a couple of technical requirements that have to get changed in the QM rule. Did you know that in the QM points and fees rule within Reg Z, it only references that tax escrows are to be excluded from the points and fees test? It's a typo. It's missing the word insurance and tax escrow. We want to make sure that word insurance gets inserted. There are three or four other small provisions like that to go in and make a few revisions to make sure that QM has some of those technical changes. But really, one of the big ones in this change is to also make sure that we have the ability to exclude a bona fide third-party charge. So the other part of this bill is to fix that wording because there is, again, some uncertainty with some third-party charges that actually belong in Block 1 of the GFE. So the rule today talks about that if it's in Block 1, you cannot exclude it. It's an origination charge. And there are some bona fide third-party charges that are ending up in Block 1, such as a contract processing fee. It's not going to help those of you who are paying that to an affiliate, but these are important clarifications. So watch for your MBA call to action. The Mortgage Action Alliance is on this as well. There's a Senate bill, a companion Senate bill that's close to the Senate Bill 949. And we've talked about this for a year. These bills have been out there. And let's hope that they get some legs. They're simple bills to hopefully be able to still get through before this session of Congress expires later in the year. So sign up for your Mortgage Action Alliance. Go to the MBA.org website and be able to sign up for that because that makes it real easy to reach out to your congressman to say, we want House Bill 3211 to move forward. Pay attention. Get something accomplished before you go on summer break. So thanks, Dave, for letting me record this. I look forward to talking with all of you. We'll probably just have a recorded session since next Monday is Memorial Day. So all of you have a great holiday weekend coming up, and best to all of you. Take care. Have a great day.
Thank you, Alice. Folks, we'll be right back after this brief break.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals providing classroom and web-based delivery and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here's David Lickin.
Good to have you with us, everybody. We're here to a broadcasting live from the National Mortgage Banking Conference, the secondary conference in good old New York City, Times Square. So we see all our friends. We see Scott Gillen going by here right now. It's always fun to have the folks stop by. We have so many walking up in the middle of this, shaking our hands and handing us a card. So it's fun to be able to do this live right here in the midst of all the action. Speaking of tracking all the action, we have Sam Garcia on the line. He is someone that does a great job with his publication and his daily updates of everything at the website, www.mortgagedaily.com. Sam, good to have you with us. What are you tracking in the news today, and what do you got up?
Hi, David. First thing we saw today was Freddie Mac put out an outlook for this month as far as originations go, and it cut this year's estimated originations to $1.25 trillion from $1.3 trillion that they predicted last month.
Okay, so it's not a big drop off, but it, you know, and that's interesting.
Yeah, but they keep nickel and diming us here, and over the months it's adding up. So next year they trimmed it to $1.125 trillion from $1.15 trillion. And really it hurt both refinance and purchase projections.
Interesting.
Another thing we saw is we just put out a report today where we tracked the biggest lenders out there. And we saw overall the industry reduced about 25% its volume from the fourth quarter to the first quarter of this year. And Wells Fargo, you know, retained its spot as the biggest lender and the biggest servicer. And the but the only company that we found that reported an increase between the two quarters was Stonegate Mortgage, and that reflects that they've made three recent acquisitions following their IPO recently.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah, there's a lot of growing, a lot of M&A going on. We're big in M&A business. My business partner, Chuck Klein, covers it, and we're sure seeing a lot of activity. In fact, one of the people that walked up and handed me their card is interested in M&A. They said, got to meet with you right after the broadcast. We want to buy some companies. So that's definitely going on out there. We're going to anticipate seeing market share shift. Now, do you have any thoughts on Wells Fargo not maintaining or wanting to shed? They're in the number one position, but what's their volume doing? Is it? Do you have a data point on that you can share with us?
Yeah, they lost a little bit of market share because their volume was down more than the industry overall. And it really, it seems like we're seeing maybe some of the bigger lenders are bearing some of the bigger drops in volume, and some of the smaller ones who aren't laying off as many people are keeping up a little bit better, though everybody in general is still seeing a decline.
Yeah, I wonder, that's somewhat by design, too. I think some of them got more market share than they wanted. What other things you've got out there that you can share with our audience quickly?
Well, our mortgage market index that we do with Optimal Blue was up 2% last week, and that's actually last week's activity, so we're a week ahead of the Mortgage Bankers index. And, you know, of course, ours is based on pricing inquiries. But, you know, as we talked about last week, there was a negative jumbo conforming spread, and it even got wider this week. This week, we saw that jumbo rates were 7 basis points better than conforming rates. So, you know, for jumbo originators and borrowers, that's a great thing.
That is a good thing. That's very interesting. Interesting the number of jumbo buyers here, and then looking at the pricing, something that you've been tracking, I know, is how the pricing is actually a bit better than the conforming. So more of that going on. So interesting.
I think it just it really reflects lenders' interest in investing in that segment of the market, which is just a great segment. But one other thing I wanted to mention is that we saw that NMLS registrations climbed last in the fourth quarter from the third quarter, though, you know, we want to be cautious because these things don't expire till the end of the year, so they will climb each quarter, and we kind of expect that this first quarter report is going to show a significant drop-off.
That's interesting. Sam, appreciate you so much dropping in. And again, I tell everybody, and this, he's got a great website, but better than anything, I think the thing that, I mean, I love everything he does. That's not to say anything's better than the other, but I'll tell you, you ought to see the data that he has. And it's all included in the subscription for this service. It is probably one of the deepest, richest databases out there. And Sam, you're to be congratulated on that. And anyone who subscribes has full access to that. Brilliant. Smart move.
Yeah, that's great. And you know, the thing is, you mentioned the mergers recently. We keep an annual report. It's actually updated as we run across them of mergers. So it's called the Mortgage Graveyard. So people want to see who's being bought or sold.
It's great.
That's the place. That's right.
Look at what there's new reason to meaning of tombstones, doesn't it? That's interesting.
Well, you know, when the mortgage crash hit, that was really we were covering companies that were going out of business. But now it's more dominated by more positive mergers, you know?
Yeah, the positive, yeah, the more positive side of it. Well, it's so good to hear your voice again, Sam. Thank you for taking time. And look forward to having you back here. Now, I don't know if you could join us next week. It's Memorial Day, but if you can, dial in. We always do a broadcast no matter what holiday season it is, so it's good to have you with us, and we'll have you back at your first availability, if not next week, the week for sure following. All right?
Appreciate the opportunity. Enjoy the conference.
Yes, thank you. I will. Again, check it out, www.mortgagedaily.com. Great, great service and a lot of information there. Have a great week, Sam. Let's switch over to the Profit Doctor. We have him back from vacation. It's good to have him. Are we still? Should we still be saying aloha or what? You know, what, you know, are you back to say y'all back now? Is that when you say you're part of the Texas group?
You betcha, Dave. Although the time zones is kind of a challenge, I got to tell you.
Yeah, I was going to say that is nice.
5 hours is a nice separation, so it actually kind of forces you to disconnect because, you know, if you even remotely shift to Hawaii time, by the time you're up, people are leaving, and by the time you want to call someone, they're already at home. So it kind of forces you to disconnect. That's the part that I like. But the jet lag is, you know, taking its toll. Like when our partner went to Europe not a year ago or so, you know, kind of same effect. It takes a little while to adjust back.
Yes. It does. Well, what are your thoughts? You must been, you know, you've been sitting on the beach and enjoying some relaxing time. So you might, I'm just expecting a whole lot of profound information here.
Well, you know, I hate to disappoint Dave, but the thing that I noticed, one observation I noticed from real life to mortgage, is handling
real
complaints.
Life to mortgage. That's good.
Yeah, handling complaints. We a couple of times there were hotel issues where is people may not realize, but you know well, I'm fairly verbal in expressing myself politely and respectfully, but nevertheless, if it's not what I'm expecting, then I let them know. And so there were a couple times where I had something that wasn't what I expected, and I expressed myself, hotels, restaurants, whatever, and they generally fixed it. And that's kind of a common thing. Consumers do that. And so in the mortgage world, we've got a new database that's out there that manages complaints, and it's sponsored by the CFPB. And database that the CFPB has for managing complaints is actually very easy to use, and consumers can go in and enter a complaint, and all they have to do is upload just one sheet of basic documentation to support their claim, and off it goes to the lender. The lender then is required to respond, and the consumer then has the right to accept or decline the lender's response, and if they decline it, then it goes to a subsequent follow-up by the CFPB that can require the lender to do more things. Now, my point about saying this is that, you know, this whole complaint management thing is not really new for commercial banks. In the commercial bank world, we've been managing complaints, you know, forever, and it's become focus by the OCC over the last several years. In fact, as Dave, we're doing a subservicing assessment of one commercial bank who is subservicing for another commercial bank. So we're hired by one big commercial bank to look at another commercial bank's subservicing activity. And in doing that, we have to go ahead and say something just for a second, Dave. Say hi.
Hello, I'm hearing you loud and clear. You're doing well.
There you go. Whenever you speak, it turns off. Your mic becomes omnidirectional when you stop speaking for a while, and it makes it so all the background noise come in. So if I start hearing the background
I'll
noise,
I'm
going to ask
you
to say something. Yeah.
Yep. So all right, I'll mute it.
We go to this big commercial bank, and we're going to look at their subservicing activity, and we look at every single complaint that a consumer has made to this company, and we look at their response. We also look at any response on a sample basis that they've provided to a consumer based on the consumer's request. Managing your response to consumers is going to be a heightened awareness that's going to have to land on mortgage companies extensively. The CFPB has their system to do it. Commercial banks already do it. From a technology perspective, mortgage companies are going to have a complaint management tool, some sort of system to track every complaint that comes in, how you dealt with it, what the response was, how you tracked it, and then be able to then document your response and produce this activity to the examiners, to the CFPB examiners when they come in, to demonstrate to them that you effectively managed every single consumer complaint, even especially if it didn't come from the CFPB, because they already know about those. Anytime a consumer complains to you in writing or verbally that says, you didn't do this right, you need to document that they said that, especially in writing. They send you a letter. You got to track it, monitor it. You got to respond in 30 days to let them know you're working on it. You got to have a resolution probably within 45 days, and you got to document that they received and accepted the resolution. And this is it's a new world of data management, but you got to have a complaint management.
Got to have it. Got to have it. That's so true. Well, it's good to have you back. I got to tell you that. It's good to have you back on the air. A lot of our listeners asked about you. When's Andy coming back? And then, of course, I need you on the broadcast because I'm interviewing next Lester Dominic, Mortgage Flex, and you, Joe, and he all share that CPA letters behind the name behind there. So I'll do the best I can, but I got to have you jump in here, and we're going to be talking a lot about technology, folks. And we'll be right back after this brief break.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Good to have you with us, everybody. Again, we're broadcasting live from the National Secondary Marketing Conference for the Mortgage Bankers Association. They set us up right here in the middle of the room, so you hear all kinds of stuff. They got these big trucks going through, these forklift kind of trucks going through carrying supplies, so I don't know if you hear it all, picks it up. But Andy, thanks for it. You know, everyone doesn't know that. He is a CPA, but he is an excellent audio engineer, and a lot of people don't realize he's also an amazing drummer. So fascinating background and all that. So he is my audio engineer, helping me out, texting me too close, get too hot, everything. So appreciate it very much. And of course, the best part, he's a CPA and he does a great job. We have Lester Dominick with us, who is the president of Mortgage Flex. He started the company in 1980, and he's a CPA. He started with Ernst & Young, right? I just assume right out of college, was it, Lester? And then he founded Mortgage Flex, and one of the reasons I have become a fan of watching Lester over the years. First of all, we are competitors, but I went back and found his old card from a long time ago, and I written a note, pay attention to this guy. He seems really smart, and he watches the right trends. And what we sent out as an email blast is a lot of people get caught up and sizzle in the latest trends, the latest fads. And one of the reasons I have tracked what Lester does is Lester has just got a right filter. Andy, you and I talk about filters all the time. He seems to have a filter that know what technology to embrace and take on and what to sidestep and not get distracted. So it's a really great to have you here with us, Lester.
Dave, it's great to be here. I tell you, I'm very impressed with your ability to keep up with technology, this mobile studio you've got here, and all the technology you've put together to be able to take this show on the road. It's pretty amazing.
Well, it's good. It's amazing. We're passing a mic back and forth, so we're hooking up two mics. I've got the second mic on order, so we don't have to pass the mic back and forth. But let's get into it. One of the things I want to get your perspective of what you're hearing here at the conference, Lester, and if you could share with our audience kind of the man on the street, some of the impressions you're already walking away. We've been attending some of the same sessions, but I'd like to get your thoughts on what you're hearing here.
Well, one thing interesting, I've been attending this conference off and on for probably 25 years, is calm, except for where we're sitting here. I think we found the most active spot in the building. But usually you see a lot more deal-making going on. People are kind of higher-pitched voices talking, and everything just seems calm and relaxed. I guess with the GSEs taking over so much of the market, the discussions about deals are just different than they used to be.
I think that is really true, as we're starting to see this fact that they're here. There's so much of the market. The question is, are you approved with Fannie and Freddie? And if you're not, we've had several clients walk up to me and say, Dave, you gave us advice over a year ago to get set up with the GSEs. We finally are, and man, was that a good choice, because so many people are living on the MSRs as the volumes begin to contract. Let's get in with the time that we have. I'm looking, we got about 15 minutes here with you this time, and I really want people to gain from this interview your sense of how you've been able to, what to pick and what to automate. You've done a masterful job with Mortgage Flex, and then Andy and Joe, you're welcome to jump in and ask any questions along the path here, because we don't have any prepared script or any prepared questions. So Lester will be able to hear your questions, but I want to start with where we're at in technology. How is it? Because I'm a guy who loves bright, shiny things. I'm chasing them all the time. And yet you somehow found the right bright, shiny things to pick up and stay current on technology, and you've managed to avoid setting up are picking up the ones that are didn't take. So what is the secret?
Boy, I wish I had a canned answer for that. I don't. I think a lot of us, just having been in the business so long, you've seen a lot of things come and go, and you see trends that are just happen too quick. I guess part of that conservative CPA nature back in my training is you kind of have to prove it to me before I'm going to jump on board. And every once in a while, you'll miss an opportunity. But what drives me is we have a really good customer base that's very vocal. They tell us what they're looking for, and our job is to solve what they're looking for. And actually, that earlier discussion about the complaints, I think we're going to start working on that this afternoon, building another database for that. But that's literally how we build things. So we're listening to our customers. They're telling us what their hot buttons are. We know what our capabilities are. You know, time and money, you can build anything. Quality is another issue. We try to focus heavily on that. But from an industry perspective, not just us, everybody we work with, both in their kind of environment from third parties, et cetera, is compliance has just dominated everything we've been doing the last 2 years. Everybody is afraid of it. We're trying to take that fear out of the marketplace by we're introducing something in a couple of months called Triple Check, where it's not just us checking it live as data is being put in the system. Then we're having a second set of check through the document prep provider, then a third set of checking by another company that does different type of compliance checking. So we're going to compare all three of the results, put them in side by side, and as there are areas to be cautioned, they'll pop up. You can take a look at them, and not everybody has the same interpretation of every rule and regulation, and it's a way on a loan-by-loan basis to see if there's something there that I need to elevate because I want to be more cautious about it.
You know, I talked to Tony Garitano, who couldn't dial in. I saw him upstairs. He said to say hi to everybody, and I told him I was having you on the broadcast. He says they really have a solid meat and potatoes system. And I look at the various aspects, and there's certainly with Ellie Mae, and we stay positive. We see a lot of our customers on Ellie Mae. But I want to address that. From your perspective, I mean, we talked about this before the broadcast. It's really getting your perspective on what happened there and how you guys are all vulnerable to this. I mean, this is not – I mean, there's some – comment on this. Some of the comments you made last night were very valuable to me.
Well, denial of service attack, that was the first clue that what they said was going on. That can happen to anybody, and there's different levels of those attacks. If you have a single point, it's really easy to shut it off. You find out where it comes from, and hopefully your software detection tools, if you have them, picks that up, and the event's over fairly quickly. But as these hackers are getting more and more sophisticated, they start distributing those attacks, and it's coming at you from every direction. Then your tools have to be more sophisticated. I know in our case, I'm sure most companies do this, we use third-party services that their sole role is being able to detect these type of attacks, sets off alarms, we get on the phone with them, we make decisions to shut ports off, redirect traffic, things like that. So if we have an attack, we're going to know about it really quick because we're going to see unusual activity. And once that attack starts, we have to go into as fast a motion as we can to try to slow things down to a point and redirect the traffic before they can get into any damage. Now, the good news about almost all these attacks and all across the industries, they rarely get into anything. It's pretty much they're bringing your network down, creating a lot of inconveniences, taking your IT resources and redirecting them to fight these attacks. But the thing you have to be careful with, that also could be a little misdirection going on, where while they're attacking you and your resources are working on that, all of a sudden they're finding a backdoor and coming in, getting to your data. So that's anytime anything's unusual, you just don't focus on one thing. You kind of focus on the environment. Somebody's trying to do something bad. What can we do to stop them?
I want to talk about compliance because I have wondered, and I haven't really interviewed anybody since this momentous, mountainous amount of tsunami, as the word I've been using, of compliance that you have got to stay on top of. Talk about that. And how have you been able to innovate? You're launching something new. How do you innovate while you're trying to stay compliant with everything that's out there?
The way we work, everything is compliance related, goes to the top of the heap. No matter what projects are involved, if there's a compliance issue, and so actually give a lot of credit to CFPB, we have more notice and more documentation about compliance than that we've probably had in my 34 years of doing this. So we don't get many surprises at the last minute anymore. It's fairly well laid out. Now, the volume of work to do has increased dramatically, but at least it's not a surprise, so we can plan that out. Like, we're already working for, I guess, next August, July next year, we have to release the Truth in Lending, the new good faith estimate replacement. We've already started working on that. So with that much advance notice, we know it's going to be tweaked as we go along, but it's not like, here it is, you got 6 months. To have a full year to work on these projects, you put the resources on it, you plan it out. You start working with your customers that want to get involved. I know we do focus groups all the time, and right now this probably on this issue it'll be a quarterly focus group. But as we get closer and closer, it goes from quarterly to monthly to weekly. So by the time it's actually released, there's no surprises of how we've interpreted it to roll it out to our customers.
Andy and Joe, do you have any questions for Lester, as we're sitting here chatting? I want to make sure I don't dominate this. I've got more questions for him, but I want to offer an opportunity. Andy, let's start with you.
Well, thanks, Dave. I've got a couple of quick questions, and one thing I'm glad to hear is that you're a methodical businessman. You see opportunities, but you don't. You know, you got bases loaded, two outs. You're not the guy that's necessarily going to swing for the fence. You're going to hit a base hit to right field and score two, rather than try to get four or get nothing. So I'm glad to hear that you have that approach. And in that perspective, you mentioned about third parties. So, well, one of the things that was the target failure is that they had a system in place. They had a third-party provider bring in technology that had event detection, and they ignored it. So third parties can solve problems, but third parties can also be ineffective if they're not properly validated and deployed. How do you go about making certain that the third parties you engage really do what you expect them to do in a way that meets your expectations?
Yeah. Well, clearly you have to pick the right partners to start with, and we do a lot of investigation to make sure those are the right people. But you can't become complacent. Just because you drop the third-party service in place and expect them to do their job 100% of the time correctly, you just can't do that. So we have to constantly monitor what they're doing. And every once in a while, we'll throw a little curveball at them just to make sure their stuff is working. And that's something we're constantly doing, especially since most of the vendors in our space, we also host for customers, not just provide software installed on premises. And we try to use best practices to pass on to these customers that are premise-based so they can learn from what we've done. And we learn from what they've done, too.
Oh, very good. Well, I've got a follow-up, but I'll let Joe go next and then come back.
Okay.
Well, mine may go a different direction, but Lester, we talked about earlier your ability to see things maybe that are coming into the market that aren't going to be very good, or you may just choose to pass on. Do you see any of those right now? Do you see any trends or fads or the beginning of new things that you think you guys will maybe just pass on and maybe others should too?
Well, it's actually a little easier these days than it used to be, with Microsoft being so dominant with the .NET platform and Oracle with the Java platform. It really isn't as many directions to go as in the past. You basically pick one, go with it, and build your expertise around it. In our case, we picked .NET, which I think most of the vendors in the mortgage space have gone that direction. There are a few out there using Java. So that, in terms of your core technologies, isn't that difficult. But let's go to the next step, which is the databases. This is something Dave and I talked about. He started his company in 1978. I started mine in 1980. We both built their products on a relational database. I wouldn't know there's another way to do it. But we're seeing some of these systems that kind of came out of the broker world, maybe the loan officer world, they're built on file systems rather than relational databases, and they just have a very difficult time being secure and being able to scale. So as we look at the choices out there, particularly as more people are going toward the cloud, SQL Server is obviously the most popular, with Oracle probably the second most popular, but then you get into Postgres and MySQL, some of these low-cost or no-cost solutions. And in some cases, particularly hosting websites, they're very appropriate to use those. So I don't see a lot of activity going on there. But the area that we've been very focused on the last couple of years is the fact finally we're getting rid of the paper. We're able to image that stuff. And what happens when you image it is all of a sudden megabytes become gigabytes, become terabytes, become petabytes. So we're getting these extremely large databases of documents that we have to be able to produce for a certain amount of time for audits and compliance purposes, as all the CPAs on the line know. And we have to be very careful with those documents because it's not like the paper thing, we send them off site and we hope the building they're in doesn't burn down. We've got the opportunity with these documents not just to store them but back them up, but we also have the ability to strip data off them that we can learn a lot more about our borrowers and our quality control. And that's probably the area I see the most opportunity in right now, is be able to not just OCR these documents but get the intelligence out of them to do other things that drive potential future business in terms of working with customers, working with investors, working with regulators, working with auditors. Very powerful stuff compared to the paper days.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay.
Well, Dave, let me go next, or are you going to have another one?
Yeah, you go back. Go back. We've got about 3 minutes, so let's let you go ahead and get the next last question in, and then I'll wrap it up. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, Lester, I was curious about reputation risk given what's happened with Ellie Mae, but that is what it is. But what I'm more interested in is I'm seeing a lot of questions from clients about commission and commission management, commission modules. I'm seeing a lot of press through the AICPA, actually, in general, about commission management, commission modules for all different industries. So what's your perspective on robust, easy-to-use, dynamic, integratable commission modules?
Yeah. Actually, it's back to our accounting background. I really see it as an accounting function, and what the role of the LOS system or any system that's collecting the HUD-1 data is to pass that data on the transaction into the accounting system where it has to be recorded anyway. I think that's the most appropriate place for commissions to be accounted for because that's where reality hits. That's the numbers that have to be balanced. And the people that are doing the work are accounting, payroll, HR. Now, from a perspective of the vendor providing that data to the HUD-1, we have to make sure it's very accurate. We might be tracking the deals because we know who the employees are that did the deals. So that's where I think it belongs. Despite that, I know there's been some variations of that where some of the vendors on the origination side have got into it, and we've certainly looked at it, but don't feel that's real appropriate. One of the other systems I was involved back in the early 80s with became Advantage Systems. Work with Brian Lynch there. We spun that company off. He's been very successful running that. He built the commission module. We worked very closely with him and kind of worked out these deals of what information you need from us and what do we pass back. Now, clearly, we want to know the commission data to get out to the loan officer because they're extremely interested as soon as possible to get that information because they want to know how much money they're making this month. They can pay their bills.
Exactly.
So everybody has incentive there. But the companies that are managing this, it really, in my opinion, belongs in the accounting department. I'd like to keep it there.
Great. It really is. It's so good. I'm looking at the time, folks. We're just about out of time. As we look at where the industry is heading, and I want to just give a big shout-out to the MBA to David Stevens and really the partnership we've been able to form here and giving us the privilege and honor of broadcasting from the National Secondary Marketing Conference. Folks, if you're not attending these conferences, you're not getting the most up-to-date information. We do our best to broadcast each week on this broadcast, share with you the trends that are going on, but there's just so much. And not only do you sit here and do you listen, like Lester and I sat last night and listened to the heads of the GSEs, FHFA, speak on that. Ted Tozier was here, but you really start getting a sense of not only the talking points, but you get that nonverbal, how they phrase it. When they start looking at it, it's that nonverbal extra that you get that you're just not going to get in print. So I strongly encourage you to be sure to make it out to one of these conferences. There's a number of them out there. We're going to be doing our best to broadcast live from at least the major ones, as many as we can. So, Joe, I'm looking at the markets right now. They've actually started tipping down as we start getting out ready to wrap this up, and then I'm going to come back to you, Andy, real quickly. The markets are starting to actually tip a little bit here. What's anything?
They're down three, Dave, and still no good indication. The stock market hadn't really rallied. It's been around break even most of the day, and I think it's just a trend lower.
Trend lower. Well, to who's reading or how's going on? We've got to put a recorder or a mic in the pits to kind of get an idea of what's happening. But I want to say thank you to Lester Dominick, who's been my special guest today, our special guest today, who's the president and founder of Mortgage Flex. Be sure to check out his website. It is www.mortgageflex.com, I believe. And so be sure to check that out. Also, get signed up with MBS Quoteline and all the other services. Check us out at www.mortgagebankingsolutions.com. Appreciate you being here with us, and we'll look forward to having you back next week. Again, we'll be doing a live broadcast on Memorial Day for those of you who can take the time to dial in. If not, download it. Be good to be having you with us. Joe, Andy, thank you so much for being a part of it today. And, Andy, it's so good to have you back from vacation. Have a blessed one, everyone.
This has been Lickin on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.